Good morning, Your Honors. The clock says 5 minutes.
I'm going to wait till you tell me how much time you have.
Great. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes, please. All right. My name is Tim Friedman. I represent the appellant, Scott Crane. I have 8 minutes, so I'm going to cut to the chase. After 27 years of professional firefighting exposure, my client was diagnosed with a respiratory disease, which is bilateral pulmonary embolisms, which are blood clots in the lungs. In this case, it's the employer or the Department of Labor and Industries that has the burden to come forward and establish by preponderance of the evidence that they have rebutted a statutory presumption that a firefighter's respiratory disease is occupational.
What kind of evidence does it take to rebut the presumption by preponderance of the evidence?
It takes the employer or the department to do two things. Number one, they have to first point to and establish by a preponderance of the evidence an actual cause other than firefighting.
Why is it that? Why can't they just prove by a preponderance that you can exclude one cause? Well, let me just make up a set of facts. If someone has an infectious disease, which is a pulmonary disease, but it has never been identified anywhere in the United States, and the only places you can contract it are in tropical zones, and so the medical evidence is we don't know where this person got this disease other than we can say definitively did get it while working as a firefighter. Why wouldn't that be enough?
Because the presumption tells us how we rebut the presumption, and what it says is you have to rebut as the employer the presumption. It doesn't say you have to rebut a fraction of the presumption but the entire presumption. And the presumption is that the disease is occupational. Occupational is defined by the same title that gives this statute. Occupational means, number one, that the disease arose naturally out of firefighting, opposed to conditions outside of firefighting.
Okay, well, the hypothetical I just gave you assumed that it couldn't have arisen in firefighting because it could only be contracted in the tropics, and your firefighter fights fires in the state of Washington, which isn't the tropics.
The reason that you have to, and I think your ultimate question was, why do we have to point to a cause other than firefighting? Why, if you can just eliminate firefighting?
No, let's eliminate the... He couldn't have gotten it in the state of Washington engaged in any activity. Let's make it more broad.
Okay. Well, number one, there can be more than one proximate cause of a disease. And that's set forth in the Washington Pattern Instruction, which is specifically tailored to workers' compensation claims. But number two, you have to point to another cause. Even if you say, well, my client was never exposed to, for example, being in the tropics, the employer or the department, in your particular example, would have to actually come forward with some sort of scientific, and in fact, maybe in your hypothetical, that's what the department did, come forward with some sort of scientific evidence, affirmative studies, affirmative evidence that, in fact, they have studied that. And, you know, let me, if I can, bring it back to this, and I'll give you...
And I think where you're getting... You're asking for too broad a rule, I think. Rather than focusing on what the department didn't show in this case, you're saying that the department in any case must show an alternate cause. And I'm suggesting to you that you've asked us to adopt too broad a rule rather than focusing on the evidence of your case.
All right. And let me, if I can, give you the analysis, the statutory analysis for why the rule is, as you think it's too broad, but why I think that is the rule, why it is the rule. Because you have to look at what is presumed. And it has to be, that is what has to be rebutted. And what is presumed is two things, that the disease arose proximately from firefighting and that the disease arose naturally from conditions of firefighting. So both of those have to be rebutted because that is the presumption.
If you have two conditions to have an occupational disease and someone steps up and says, I can disprove one of those two, haven't you necessarily proven that it's not an occupational disease? If you have to have both to be an occupational disease, you knock out one. Hence, it's not an occupational disease, right?
Right. No, you haven't, because that's not what the statute says the employer has to do. The employer has to rebut the presumption that the disease is occupational. Occupational has two elements to that. They have to rebut both elements. If they've rebutted one, they've rebutted 50% of it, not all of it. And the statute doesn't say that the department has to rebut a portion of the presumption.
In the normal case, the claimant would have to prove A and B to win.
Right.
Statute only says we presume A is true and we presume B is true. It doesn't say the claimant no longer has to ultimately persuade the trier of fact. It just gets the benefit of presumption. That's an evidentiary presumption. Right?
It's an evidentiary presumption, correct.
The jury still has to find both A is true and B is true.
But the jury, I'm sorry, but the department or the employer is governed by their obligation to rebut it as it is stated under the statute.
But if the jury ultimately has to find A and B, and the facts establish not B, how does your client win?
Because the burden is not on my client at this point. The burden is on the employer, and the employer has to do this is just a common sense, strict reading of the statute, because the burden shifts. And the statute of the statute, it's a defined term, occupational. And it's a two-pronged term, and I understand what you're saying, and that is the case. If it's our burden, we have to go show these two things, arising naturally and proximate cause. But those two things together fit within the word occupational. And so the employer has to come forward and rebut both of those.
Presumption is not just a production shifting device, but is also a burden of persuasion device?
Absolutely, and here's why. Because if nobody...
Is there a case that says that?
Well, I don't know that there's a case that says that, but if I might, Your Honor, if you can hear me. If my client shows only that he's a firefighter and only that he has a respiratory disease, and that's it. That's the only proof he puts on, and if the employer or the department puts no proof on whatsoever, my client wins. My client wins because he's met by a preponderance of the evidence the obligation to show that his disease is occupational.
Quarrel is when there is other evidence, and the facts don't prove one of those two prongs, either A or B. You're saying you still win even if only part of what is required to establish your client's case is actually true.
That's right, because the definition of occupational isn't just that firefighting is a proximate cause. It's also that it arises naturally out of employment, and it's not vice versa. It's both of those. That is the presumption. That is the definition of occupation, and it is the other side's burden to rebut the definition of occupation. And if I could go back briefly, because I have a minute left, and I didn't get through much of this, but I wanted to more analytically address your ultimate question about, regardless of your hypothetical, about why you have to point to a different cause. That is just an application and an analysis of the statute. Number one, the statute, like I said, if you look at what is presumed, therefore you know what they have to rebut. And here's why you have to point to an actual other cause. Number one, occupation means that it arises naturally out of employment. And we know from case law, it's clear that as opposed to conditions outside of employment or conditions of other employment. So to rebut that, you have to show conditions, some actual cause. This is consistent with the other prong of occupational, which is proximate cause. The definition of proximate cause is there's no sufficient intervening cause. And but for, it would be firefighting. So to rebut that, you have to show some actual other cause. And this is consistent with the types of rebuttable factors in the statute. All of those are tangible, identifiable, known causes. Use of tobacco, physical fitness and weight. None of them are a lack of knowledge. And that's all the department has here is a lack of knowledge. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Kaylin Watt. I represent the Department of Labor and Industries in this appeal.
Assume that there's a respiratory disease that has no known cause. A firefighter contracts it, gets the benefit of the presumption, and then Dr. Stump testifies and says, I'm not aware of any epidemiological study that correlates this disease with any occupation. I'm not aware of any toxins firefighters are exposed to that causes this kind of respiratory disease. I'm not aware of, I don't know of. Is that enough to rebut the presumption?
If Dr. Stump also testified on a more probable than not basis that it was not related, yes. But that's not what we have here. In fact, we have two doctors saying there are potential causes that could relate this to industrial exposure.
But don't all of them say all of the potential causes, all of the known causes are not present here, and therefore, isn't it just the same as saying there's no known cause for this disease?
It's similar, but what we have are known causes that are not present. There's probably a host of unknowns out there, but when we do have known causes such as inactivity or trauma, ways that this could be related to the occupational exposure.
Or non-occupational exposure.
Correct. When you have those and you've proved by a preponderance that they're not present at work, then you've rebutted the presumption at least. And the evidence here shows that you've shown by a preponderance that it's not related at all.
To anything. That's all you've proven is we don't know. We don't know.
It's idiopathic, yes. But the statute doesn't require.
Well, if it's idiopathic, why don't we then go to the presumption? We don't have any facts that tell us whether it's in or out, and we have a tiebreaker, essentially, presumption.
We do have facts that say it's out. We have lots of facts saying.
We have facts that say we don't know what caused this. We can take this one out, and this one out. Science may discover tomorrow a new cause of pulmonary embolisms that firefighters are regularly exposed to, but all you can exclude are the known causes, and you can't identify any universe of causes outside of his occupation that are potential causes.
The statute doesn't require to show specific causality. The statute allows the presumption to be rebutted by a preponderance, and the statute points to the definition of occupational disease as something that arises.
I guess the question is, if you don't know what caused the disease, which is pretty much what the doctors were saying in this case, is we just don't really have an idea of what caused it. We can say what we think didn't cause it, but we don't know what did cause it. Then doesn't the statute sort of tell you what to do in that circumstance? This is generally, we say it arises from the occupation. It arises from being a firefighter. And unless somebody says something otherwise,
exactly.
The presumption prevails.
The statute says there's a prima facie presumption that's rebuttable. It says three times that you can show this not to be true, and the evidence here shows by preponderance of the evidence that firefighting did not cause it. None of the doctors.
Well, it shows that we don't know what caused it.
It shows that we more probably than not know that firefighting did not cause it. There is evidence to show it's not firefighting.
Is that actually the doctor's testimony? It is my professional opinion on a more likely than not basis that no firefighting activity caused this disease.
That is Dr. Stump's testimony, and Dr. Uhlberg agrees. He did not think this more probably than not was caused by firefighting. And really good evidence that it was not, in fact, caused by firefighting is the fact that Mr. Crane has returned to work as a full-time firefighter with no restrictions. Yet,
how does that prove what caused it?
Because he has a higher incidence of experiencing this condition again.
Well, if he got banged in his legs and had a blood clot form and it broke free to his lungs and he was successfully treated, we'd all agree that was an occupational disease, wouldn't we?
Yes.
And the fact that he went back to work would not be evidence that would overcome those facts demonstrating it was an occupational disease.
No, but that's not what we have here.
Well, the only thing we have, we don't know what caused it.
Right, but a doctor wouldn't return him to work if that doctor thought that his occupation as a firefighter caused it. That would be medically irresponsible.
Is that in the record?
Yes.
Who testified to that?
Dr. Stump testified to that, and Dr. Uhlberg, as the treating physician, did release him full-time, no restrictions. Dr. Stump didn't express any concern about him returning to work as a firefighter. This is a very serious condition. You would expect some concern if Dr. Uhlberg related it at all. And again, none of the evidence relates it. All of the evidence shows that there's no link. Both doctors were asked.
Isn't a fair characterization that the doctors testified, we took a look, we didn't see anything. There's no testimony, is there, that we looked, we found a study that expressly looked for a correlation between pulmonary emboli and exposure of firefighters to toxins, for example, and that study concludes on a scientific basis there is no correlation. Isn't it just saying we looked, we didn't see anything that showed a correlation? Isn't there a difference?
There is a difference, but again, our standard is more probable than not, and more probable than not, this condition wasn't caused by firefighting. There's no requirement to show what did cause it, and there's no requirement to show anything else. The requirement under the statute is simply to show that more probably than not, it wasn't the occupation. You can do that by saying there was no exposure or there's no causation, and both doctors agree that there's no employment-related exposure that could lead to this condition. There's no inactivity, there's no trauma, and both doctors were asked whether exposure to fumes, smoke, or toxic substances could potentially cause this, and both said no. So in this case,
that we know of, right? That's what their answer was, no, not that we know of.
Right, you could probably generally answer that about everything, though. So I don't know that at the end of the day, throwing up your hands about an idiopathic disease and saying we don't know is really evidence that it's related to the occupation. Our act requires that claimants have some causation showing their entitlement to benefits.
What's the purpose of the presumption?
The purpose of the presumption is to, in the first instance, make it either the employer or the department as trustee of the medical aid fund's burden to come forward with evidence saying it isn't.
Isn't it also legislature's recognition that firefighters suffering from respiratory diseases, it is related, it is natural, it is proximate, it is an occupational disease, prove it wrong?
Yes, that is what the legislator said. They said prove it wrong, and they didn't say that you had to do that conclusively. This court has already said in Rahm.
They gave examples of what kind of evidence could be used to overcome that presumption, too, did they not? And all of the examples that they gave, admittedly, it says not limited to, but all the examples that they gave are not what we're talking about here. They're affirmative examples of some other cause or some other condition that causes this disease to arise.
Correct. And you're right in pointing out that it says not limited to. And even before it gets there, it says it's rebuttable by a preponderance and points to the occupational disease statute, which requires both the condition naturally arise out of and be proximately caused by. It certainly shifts the burden of production. I'm not aware of case law that states that it shifts the burden of proof, but even if it shifts the burden of proof, it's shifting it by a preponderance and then shifting it back. So once the department had rebutted...
Well, it sounds a lot like a shifting burden of production rather than responsibility for the ultimate burden of persuasion.
And under our act, the ultimate burden of persuasion, we do hold claimants to a strict standard of proof for entitlement to benefits by a preponderance. And there's no evidence here showing that Mr. Crane's condition is related to his occupation at all.
At page 11 of your brief, you note that neither party's contending there's an issue of material fact here, so I just want to make sure I'm square on that it's either as a matter of law on this record, one way or the other, it's in or out.
Yes.
Okay.
Because there is no evidence in the record relating Mr. Crane's condition to his occupation as a firefighter, and because the department properly rebutted the presumption by showing that there was no link between Mr. Crane's occupation as a firefighter and his condition, the Superior Court's grant of summary judgment was correct, and unless you have any further questions, I'd simply ask you to affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Number one, it does shift the burden of proof just simply because, and this is the analysis, if we just establish he's a firefighter with a respiratory disease, no one puts on any evidence, we win. We win, and you only win if you prove by a preponderance of the evidence that his disease is occupational. So to rebut that presumption, it shifts that burden of proof. Number two, the intent of the statute, one of your honors brought that up, is important because here we have a situation where there's not a known cause. There's about 5 known causes of blood clots in the lungs. There's no medical expert in this case that can say and has not said that any one of those is present here. There's about 6 rebuttable factors in the statute. Not a single one of those rebuttable factors exists with firefighter Crane. So it's not a known cause. It's not a rebuttable factor. All you have left is the presumption. And the idea that the department can come forward and say, well, we've rebutted the presumption simply because we disagree with the presumption, is simply not meeting that standard of proof.
Do you agree with the state that there are no genuine issues of fact and this is an up or down as a matter of law case?
Thank you. No, I don't. Both motions for summary judgment were brought, but by the fact that there's 2 motions for summary judgment doesn't mean that they both couldn't have lost. The proximate cause...
What is the question of fact?
The proximate cause. What caused what makes the disease occupation?
What facts are there to resolve that question?
Well, you've got the presumption that exists, right? And so
it's not disputed that it exists.
Right, but it's an evidentiary presumption, so that's evidence of occupational disease.
What facts would be argued one way by one side and the other way by the other side so that they're disputed?
The facts would be my client's a firefighter. He didn't have blood clots before he was a firefighter. He had exposures, and it's in the record, all of his exposure for 27 years.
Disputed?
What's that?
Is any of that disputed?
Are his exposures disputed? I don't believe so because the department, actually Dr. Stump, doesn't know how many fires my client responded to, how many exposures to smoke and fumes and toxic substances he responded to. He has no idea about my client's firefighting duties. I can finish answering your question if you'd like.
No, I think we understand your answer.
Thank you.